We are in Genesis chapter number 4, the book of beginnings, and we're about to see the beginning of the first manslaughter, the first killing of a human by another human that's recorded here. Now, the sacrificial system, I believe, had gotten started with God putting the leather loincloths or aprons on Adam and Eve. Then they were ejected from the garden, and the cherubim of God were placed with a sword, apparently, at the border to keep them all from coming back in. Now, I suggested to you at the time that this cherubim spot is actually the beginning of the Shekinah glory of God, the tower of God's Holy Spirit presence on earth with the cloud by day, the fire by night, perhaps even the canopy that goes up and over it, and that at the base of this, just like Ezekiel saw in his vision, are the four cherubim. And if that is true, if my theory holds out, then that would have been the perfect place for Adam and Eve and all their kids to start bringing their worship sacrifices. Their sacrifices not just simply because of sin, but also sacrifices just because, to say thank you to God. And so we see that sort of voluntary sacrificial system in place in Genesis 4:2. It says, in the course of time, Cain, the son that was named gotten from God, perhaps because they thought that this was going to be the avenger of Genesis 3:15, he brought an offering of the fruit of the ground, because he's a farmer. And so I have no doubt that for a sin penalty, he would have brought a blood sacrifice. But for other reasons, bringing the work of your hands would be perfectly acceptable under the Mosaic Code later, because grain offerings and fruit offerings of all sorts, drink offerings, which are produced from the ground, those are perfectly acceptable. So he brings that. Evel, the second named son, also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions, because he is a shepherd. So he can offer his sheep as sin sacrifices, that's true, but he could just as easily offer them as a thank you, or I'm so happy that you're my God sacrifice, that sort of thing, a voluntary sacrifice. Now, the problem is, and by the way, the text seems to indicate that they've been doing this for a while, but then something changes with this particular event. It says, he who is had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. And I told you, my suspicion is that this time, God ignited the sacrifices, just like he did at the beginning of the tabernacle and at the beginning of the temple. He showed his accepting of it by sending down fire. And so that would make good sense then in the context here that Cain would know Abel's sacrifice was accepted by God, but not mine. And that's where his attitude becomes clear. Verse 5 finishes. So Cain was very angry. His nostrils got hot. I think that's the idiom here. He's mad. And his face fell. You can tell he's mad because his whole attitude is communicating that. And so God has a chat with him. This is a time period when God conversed with the people. And so God said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why has your face fallen?" Now, I don't think it was instantly he said this to him. I think maybe Cain was going around having a bad attitude for a while before God finally has the chat with him. Then he tells him this. He says, "If you do well, will you not be accepted?" So if you do it for the right reason, if you do it with the right attitude, won't your sacrifice be acceptable to me? And I'll burn it up and you and I will be on proper terms. I think the book of Malachi might speak to this issue pretty well, where God, speaking through the prophet, tells the people, why don't you try offering your substandard gifts to your local leader, your local human leader? You know, the blind or the lame animal, the rotting produce. Why don't you try to give it to him? Will he accept you? And then God says, "I am a great king." And so God demands respect and proper attitude. That's the whole book of Malachi. But here, I think that's exactly what's going on. And God is warning this young man, because, you know, these guys are going to live up into their 900s, and all this is happening probably right around the 229th year of creation itself. Why do I say that? I'll explain that later. It's got to do with the age of Adam and Eve when the next named son is born. So, if you do well, will you not be accepted? So, attitude check, my friend. You need to get your act together, and then it'll be fine. And then comes this final warning that I've referenced before just because of the grammatical structure. If you do not do well, that is, if you don't get your heart right, if you don't get your attitude checked, sin is crouching at the door. So this is a personification of sin, temptation to sin, as a wild animal, a wild beast. Its desire is for you. It wants to attack you, but you must rule it. You got to get control of your temper, your attitude. And this is all very good teaching here for all of us, isn't it? The reason to count to 10, the reason to not make decisions when you're angry, the reason not to lash out, not to have a knee-jerk reaction, all of that. Things that we do when our attitude is wrong can very easily be sinful and have long-standing consequences. So God tells him, you need to get your heart back on track, young man, because if you don't, something really bad is going to happen. Sin will take hold of you, and it won't be good. So get control of yourself. So that was God's warning. Now, we have to speak to this. God is, to use the Latin technical terminology, omniscient. He is all-knowing. Scripture talks about the fact that he knows the end from the beginning. Nothing's hidden from him. He already knows how this is going to play out. But as we've said many, many times in teaching, God values free will. Puts a high premium on it. And so as much as it frustrates us, we have to understand that God lets our free will choices play out with all their consequences. Often, we have to understand he will not intervene unless it leaving whatever thing is about to happen would interfere with the larger mission of his gospel. I think that's the best way to describe it. God mostly lets our free will choices play out unless doing so would interfere with his overall plan. So he already knows how this is going to go. Verse number 8. Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. And when they were in the field, and the verbiage here almost seems like they had a conversation, and as they had this conversation, they end up walking together out where there's nobody else. It's just the two of them. And Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Now, I'm going to offer you my very strong opinion here, but it's based on some of the things that happened in the story compared to things from Moses' law code given to him by God. I do not believe that Cain intended to murder in cold blood Abel, his brother. I believe that he got out there, got into an argument. The argument turned heated, and somewhere Cain lost control and killed his brother by accident. Because God is going to treat him in accordance with the manslaughter rules that Moses will lay out for the Israeli people later. That is, if it wasn't premeditated, then the person is punished in a timeout fashion. That is, not confinement, not in that sense, but detention away from interaction with the rest of society for a period of time. Verse number 9. By the way, apparently he buried him somewhere out there where nobody else could see him, probably in shame and fear. By the way, might as well mention it here too. It seems to me as if Moses had a similar experience. He might relate to this story quite well because he saw an overseer, an Egyptian overseer, beating up on, not killing, just abusing an Israeli slave. And the texts that tell the story say that Moses looked this way and that and killed the Egyptian and buried his body in the sand. And it would seem as if, to me, that he'd intended to beat the guy up pretty badly, because that's what he'd been doing to Israelis. But somehow, in his anger or through some sort of accident of the moment, the Egyptian ended up dead. And so he tried to cover his crime up. And once it got discovered, he ran away. And guess what? He had a 40-year timeout. For manslaughter, I think. Not murder. He did not murder the guy. I don't believe it. So the same thing is what I think we're seeing here, is that Cain is guilty of manslaughter, accidental manslaughter. Verse 9. So he who is said to Cain, "Where's Abel, your brother?" And then comes that very famous response. He said, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" Now, of course, the answer to that rhetorical question is, yes, you are. You are responsible for your brother's health and well-being. You should be looking out for them. All of us as Christians need to embrace that as both Old and New Testament teaching and principle, is we're not just looking out for number one, we're looking out for everybody else. So God is not going to accept this attitude that continues to be bad. Now, you'll notice again something that I've highlighted in the sin stories we've seen already. God already knew where Abel was. He knew that he was probably in some shallow grave because God knows. He's omniscient. He knows all things. Why did he ask him, where is he? Because Cain needed the chance, the opportunity to come clean, to confess, I did wrong and I'm so sorry. Because that's the first step in proper restoration. So God gave him the chance and he threw it away. He blew it. He says, I don't know where he's at. Lie. Am I supposed to be taking care of him? Yes. So another attitude issue. Verse 10, now comes the punishment. He who is said, what have you done? And I do believe it was a very emotional sort of response by God, because not only is Abel dead, but Cain's attitude still stinks. And that's got to break God's heart. So he who has said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. That is actually referenced in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 24, where it says this, that we've come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood, that is the blood of his atoning death, which speaks better than the blood of Abel. So Abel's blood is testifying to the reality that Cain is a sinner in need of salvation. Verse 11, now you are cursed from the ground. Now, what was his job? Yes, that's correct. He's a farmer. So God is taking away the thing that he likes to do, the thing that gives him purpose and probably pleasure and where he identifies himself as someone of worth. So God punishes him in a way where it does grab him. Grab a hold of him. And what's the purpose of punishment? It's not just simply to make the other person suffer. It is to get their attention to just how bad their choice was. To help them come in some way to regretting what they did. Wishing that they had not done it. And so you might have to start at a selfish level for that. You should at least feel bad that you lost something out of it, and maybe that'll move you over time to realizing that you were taking something away from somebody else. So cursed from now on is the ground which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. Now, the original curse against the ground was to bring up thorns and thistles and make it tougher for the ground to produce enough to continue living with. For Cain, it takes it one step more. He gets nothing. It's not that he is going to have a harder time wrestling crops out of the ground. The crops won't grow at all for him. And so God says, you shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. So you don't get to stick around here anymore. You don't get to stick around here by the edge of the Garden of Eden, because I think that's where they're at. You're going to have to go out into the world and forage. See, this is that idea that agriculture is where you stay in one spot and you make the ground produce what you need. If you can't do that, you have to forage. You have to go out and travel from place to place to find the stuff that's growing on its own. So that's what Cain has been consigned to as his punishment for the manslaughter. Now listen to his words. Cain said to He Who Is, "My punishment is greater than I can bear." So he does sound sorry. Now, is it genuine sorrow because of the death of his brother? I hope so. I certainly hope so. But that is going to end up ultimately being between him and God. But listen to more of what he said. "Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground." He's talking about the land as a place that he loved to work and bring produce out of. He's a farmer. So he says, you've taken me away from being a farmer, but you've also done this, verse number 14, "And from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth." You've heard me say a couple of times now, I believe that this growing family of Adam and Eve is living right there at the borderland with the Garden of Eden, where the towering presence of God is above the cherubim. That's my suggestion. That's my imagination. That's my belief system, that this is the reason they stuck there is because they want to be close to God's visible presence, and that this is their worship site. This is the place where they regularly bring sacrifices. And I think that part of the grief of Cain is that he doesn't get to stay close to God's presence anymore. And he regrets that. He is cut off from God even more than what had originally been the case with Adam and Eve. He has to go out and forage upon the earth. But then he says this, "And whoever finds me will kill me." Now, the only people that exist are relatives of his brothers and sisters, possibly by now, maybe some nieces and nephews. But it is a growing population, and it's going to grow fast. If you think about it, Adam and Eve, by the time the 229th year of Earth's history came by, they could have had 100 kids. And some of those kids could have partnered off and started raising other kids. And it's just going to keep on doing that. The first generation is probably going to be several hundred. And the next generation is going to end up being several thousands, tens of thousands. And then after that, it won't take very long before we get into the hundreds of thousands and millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions. It is easy to see numbers explode when everybody's living on average 900 some years having several hundred of years of raising kids. You can see why Cain says, "And my own relatives are going to hate me because I killed one of our relatives, my brother. And they're going to want to execute me." Later, we'll find out that God says that the penalty for taking someone's life purposefully is community execution of that person. "He who sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed." So he is saying, they're going to want me dead. Verse 16, verse 15 has to finish first. Verse 15, "Then he who is said to him, 'Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. Now, don't think of it as seven times in the sense of some sort of multiplier, but more in its perfection symbolism. Seven is a number of completion and perfection. So God is saying, no, I'm not going to allow that. I will put the word out that anyone who kills you, they will end up being penalized perfectly, seriously. Because why? I think it's because what he did was accidental. It was wrong for him to beat on his brother so severely, but I don't think he expected him to die. And so that needs to be taken into consideration. And that's still true today, I believe. So, the Lord, he who is, put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Now, let's not be stupid like some of our ancestors, particularly here in the southern portion of the United States. The mark of Cain was not black skin. That is just ridiculously stupid. I'm sorry, I can't be any more direct than that. It has nothing to do with skin tone for future generations. My best guess is that this is the beginning of leprosy. Leprosy is a mark placed by God on a person, place, or thing that needs to be evaluated for change. And so I believe that this is the beginning of the mark of leprosy. And it was put out there as a reminder to everyone, God alone is evaluating Cain. It is not your place to execute him or take vengeance upon him. Well, when we come back next time, we'll talk about Cain leaving and the population growing.